Good morning, and thank you for joining us on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and we have a very amazing show for you today. We have very special guests who are going to talk to you about what is going on in their world, as well as what is going on in the world. And as always, I invite you to go ahead and share the show because we don't want your friends to miss out on all the information we have for you today. That's right. Share the show, but also take a look at the description in the post and visit our guest website. I'm pretty sure there's more information available there and their social media links for you to go ahead and follow. Our first guest today is Ami Devereaux. And Ami is a strategy and coaching expert at Beyond Better. Good morning, Ami. How are you?
I'm good, Sharifa. Thank you for inviting me. Glad to be here.
You are welcome. Thank you for joining me. And before we go into what you do, I just have to say I love your glasses.
I hate to confess and ruin the allure, but they're a dollar at the dollar store and I just buy them by the handful. But thank you.
No, it's okay. Hey, I love to say money is what we do, but it's just interesting to me because I always tell people on the show, I love to take a look at the backgrounds and the information. And I see all these books and I see these awards and I see these medals and I'm like, oh, she's so serious. And then you have these bright yellow glasses and this huge smile. And I'm like, oh, okay, this is going to be fun. I love the impression you give.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. I'll start cultivating it more carefully. Maybe it can get better.
You are so welcome. But what is Beyond Better? I know we always want to get better, but what exactly is Beyond Better?
So Beyond Better is a consulting and executive coaching practice. I also have an online community called beyondbetter.online, which is a place for people of all walks of life who are interested in decision-making and leadership and generally sort of optimizing their lives, their productivity, their businesses, to come and engage with other like-minded people. And there we share articles and books and conversations and so forth. So it's not really a business site. It's really a social networking site without algorithms or ads or anything like that. It is, however, by invitation. So you have to request to be invited. That's how we keep out the trolls. But beyondbetter.io, which is my business, we focus primarily on high growth tech startups. So that's the world that I live in, and that's the world that my clients live in. And I work with clients on two things, on strategy, on designing strategy, executing strategy, measuring strategy. And I do it from the perspective that strategy ought to be a game plan to generate breakthroughs, not just to generate getting better or incremental improvement, hence Beyond Better. A breakthrough is a change that's an order of magnitude. It's not just getting better. And then the second component of my work is executive coaching. And as I'm sure both of you realize, when companies are in high growth mode and they are essentially changing their composition very quickly, they're going from a tiny intimate team of three people to an enterprise, there is a tremendous amount of growth and development and cultivation of leadership, team building, organizational culture, along with marrying that to the strategy's core values and vision. So that's the work I do one-on-one and in mastermind groups and so forth with leaders and executive teams of those same startups.
How long have you been doing this?
In varying versions for about 25 years. So okay. there were some hiatuses when I went and ran a few startups. Mm-hmm. So I've been a strategy consultant 25 years, and I recently added executive coaching as a unique offering rather than just sort of folded into the consulting.
Mm-hmm. So over 20 years, you know, I built my first website in 1994. So I've seen the internet change. I've seen websites change, hosting, communication networks, social media networks change over the past 25, 26 years. I'm sure you've seen some changes as well. What are some of the changes that you've seen, especially recently with the outbreak of COVID-19?
Well, you know, it's interesting. A lot of my client companies are already distributed teams. So they already had, you know, engineers in Serbia and Croatia and California and wherever. But the advent of COVID-19, of course, has forced everybody to work from home. And that's made so there's two main themes that I see. One is with your whole team working from home. So it's not just the executives now, it's much less seasoned employees, more junior employees who don't have the self-regulation to work on their own. They may be in small flats with roommates or family or living with their folks, or, you know, there's a lot that they're having to manage to actually get down to work, coupled to being forcibly separated. And many of my clients are in New York City. So I'm very much I'm not in New York City, but they are. And so the leadership is really sort of focused on how do we sustain our organizational culture? How do we help our most junior employees to feel like they're still part of the team, actually to be able to focus on their work? And what do we offer for those who are struggling, whether it's with anxiety or loneliness or lack of focus, lack of sleep, not knowing what to do about their roommate who insists on smoking pot all day while they're working? I mean, there is all this kind of fallout that doesn't happen when you go to an office every day. And then, of course, the second component of the puzzle, because my clients are primarily tech companies, they have not been as immediately impacted in the same way as, for example, retail enterprises. So it's not like they're shutting down, but their investors are telling them things like, well, you know how we were going to raise that next round of funding in like a year? Let's start thinking more like 2 years. So at the same time as demand has dried up, so has their next, you know, their sort of lifeline, which is what allows these companies to go on for a period of time without profit. And so that's required a strategic shift. And I've been writing a lot about how to reinvent your strategy in the face of a completely unpredictable change in circumstance and a total lack of certainty about anything. So that's what I've mostly seen. And I'm sure both of you have variations on that theme.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But one of the things that interests me about you, Ami, is that executives, to me, I always consider executives like parents, right? Our parents always put that brave face on in front of the children. It's like, you always tell the children, everything is going to be okay. We'll make it through this. You know, the world is not coming to an end. But then as parents, we go and talk to each other and we're like, oh my God, I don't know what to do. Whereas executives, when an executive looks for an executive coach, I can imagine it's pretty much the same thing. When you go out and talk to your employees, whether you have five, whether you have 500, 5,000, whatever the number is, you have to be that parent that says, don't worry, we'll get through this. Everything is going to be okay. But then as an executive, because this, and the one thing that I think everyone has agreed on is that no one saw this coming. No one saw this coming to this extent. So it had to be some idea of, I've never seen this before. I've never even, you know, I may have been an executive, CEO, CFO, whatever it is, you know, for years, but I've never handled this type of situation. Do many of them come to you for coaching and say, you know what, I mean, I don't know if I'm doing the right thing right now with my company?
Variations on that. So I would say that one of the reasons that particularly CEOs and founders, one of the reasons that they hire an executive coach is because they need a place where they can be completely honest, where, you know, in a investor-funded company, a VC-funded company, you can't really be completely honest with your board or with your investors, and certainly not with your employees, about your anxiety, your insecurities, your fears. And that's, I think, one of the roles that I and executive coaches in general certainly fill. The other thing is, though, that I actually encourage my C-suite clients to be vulnerable with their teams. Now, that doesn't mean to say like the ship is sinking, everybody bail, but it does mean that, you know, people are not stupid. All of their employees, regardless of how junior they are painfully aware of how much has changed in the world. It hasn't just changed in their lives, it's changed in the marketplace. And they're reading the newspapers and they're very intelligent, astute people who know exactly what's going on. And every one of my client companies has had to, no, except one, because they're in emergency management, has had to lay off people and furlough people and fire people. So that's happening around the employees. So the leadership needs to be the voice of strength and confidence, but also be authentic enough to include the reality of what's going on. No CEO wants to fire a bunch of people because their investor is saying, we need to make the money last longer, but that is what's happening. And so there's this kind of bifurcated grief that CEOs in particular are having to attend to in their employees, because there's the grief of losing kind of your lifestyle, right? Or in many cases, having friends who are in the hospital or grandmas who are in a nursing home. I mean, this is New York City primarily, where, you know, there's death constantly in the kind of ether by virtue of the centrality of the pandemic there, but also the grief of losing colleagues and the fear of wondering whether they're on the chopping block next. So I would say all of that, along with the strategic demand to change the business to some extent, is in the mix. So I'm, in some ways, I'm busier than ever right now, which is, I'm not delighted by the source of the busyness. That's why everything I'm doing on the community platform is free right now. I'm not charging for anything because it just doesn't seem like a good time to profiteer.
Mm-hmm. Yes, profits right now is something we've been discussing. But the other thing, one of the things that you mentioned was the change. And we had a guest on one of the shows who was talking about his business and how he started his business. He'd been in business for over 30 years and he had to shut down. And part of what affected him was not only the loss of the business, because he's older. He's like, I can retire. I have more than enough money. He wasn't bragging. He said, but what one of the things that affected him that he didn't realize was going to affect him is that many of his employees had been with him for, you know, if he's been in business for 30 years, some of them had been in business with him for 30 years. Some of them have been in business with him for 20 years, 15 years. You know, some of his employees, he's known them longer than they've known their children or their spouses. You know, so our coworkers began to be our family. That's what I always tell people. I have been working from home for years. But the one thing that affected me years ago when I began working from home is I didn't have any coworkers. It was just me. I was always that person. I love going to lunch with my coworkers. I love the baby showers and the camaraderie and the, you know, whose kid is selling candy this week. And when you're at home, your life changes. So people have been affected in a lot of different ways that they really didn't expect. I have so much more that I want to ask of you, Ami, but I definitely want to introduce our next guest. He's been sitting there so patient, listening to the conversation, but I want to go ahead
I'm
and
bring fascinated.
I want to go
you're
ahead.
You're a very nice man, Vance. Thank you.
I just want to give everybody enough time, but I want to introduce our next guest, Vance Morris, and he is the founder of Deliver Service Now. Good morning, Vance. How are you?
Good morning, ladies. I'm fantastic. Thanks for having me on.
You are welcome. Thank you for joining us. And I think yellow is the theme of the day. I just really enjoy Ami's yellow glasses. And I love your Disneyfy your business. Beautiful, shiny, yellow, little beautiful character there in the corner flying. I think it's beautiful. What is Disneyfy your business?
Disneyfy is defined as creating an experience out of the mundane. So if you think about all of the mundane things businesses have to do to get through the day, answer the telephone, talk to customers, work out client issues, et cetera, to the operators, they can become mundane, like answering the telephone. Everybody answers the telephone pretty much the same way. You know, thank you for calling, you know, Biff's Insurance Company. There's nothing really exciting or memorable about that. So when I work with clients, you know, we say, okay, well, how can you make an experience out of answering the telephone? And one of the, I worked with some insurance agents once, and this gentleman was a rock and roll fanatic. I mean, he had Jimi Hendrix and The Who pictures, gold records on the walls in his office, and he's really, really into rock and roll. And so he had his team answering the phones. Thank you for calling Dave's Allstate, the agency that rocks. So that's might be a little over the top on creating an experience out of the mundane, but you get the gist.
But I like that though. But my question, I don't want to ruin the whole experience idea, but one of the things that I don't like is when I call a company and they, I don't care what it is, it doesn't have to be an experience, but they have this 4-minute spiel that they have to give before they even start the conversation. To me, that's very annoying. But I love the short, brief, you know, experience. Wow. I love something where I can be like, you know what? When I called this company, it was the coolest thing ever. But it just can't be too long. Is that part of the information?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, certainly. I mean, you know, businesses these days, I mean, we are in the service economy or the experience economy right now. You think of all these businesses that are, you know, everybody's become a commodity. You know, a dentist is a dentist is a dentist. You know, businesses like ours are, you know, a coach is a coach is a coach. Mm-hmm. So how do you separate yourself? How do you get ahead of the pack? And really the only way to do it is through the experience that you're providing. And, you know, as you said, those companies that go through the 3-minute, 5-minute spiel before you get a word in edgewise, you know, they are self-centered. You know, they are not centered on their clients. They are not centered on their customers. And they really turn a lot of people off. And the only thing worse than that 5-minute spiel at the beginning of a phone call is getting stuck in one of those automated phone trees. I mean, that's, if you want to go out of business, plop one of those things on and it'll be a downhill run real fast.
Or even worse, the ones that make you talk to them. I just hate that. Only I'm not talking to a voicemail tree. Give me a button to press.
Yeah. Well, they've gotten smarter. I mean, before you used to be able to hit zero and you'd get connected. And now all the companies know that you hit zero. So they wait until option number 92 to say, oh yeah, hit 92 and you
for
can talk to
other
a live
things,
person. So
right?
Yeah, it's gotten out of hand.
Yes. I don't speak. I'm like, Ami, I do not go through all that. I just call comes on, I press zero. If it doesn't give me the option, I'm like, representative, what can we assist you with? Representative, how may I help you? Representative, like, I don't want to go through this whole process. So to me, the worst thing is the combination. You get the representative on the phone and they call you like, thank you for calling our business. We are the best business since sliced bread. We are here to help you. We are here to help you with your products. We are here to help you with your services. We are here to make sure you are okay. And I'm like, okay, well, I need help with my account. Oh, well, we don't service that in our department. Let me transfer you. I'm like, okay, wait a minute. I just listened to this 5-minute spiel about how you are here to help me. And now you got to give me to someone else to help me. So these are the things that you help businesses work through and actually think about that.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, you know, a lot of policies and procedures are in place for the benefit of the company. They're not in place for the benefit of the consumer. And when you go through all of those, you know, introductions, et cetera, on a telephone, you know, my God, you're wasting people's time. You know, technology has been fantastic these days in that, you know, if I got to enter my, you know, phone number, okay, so in order to pull up my account for the representative, fantastic. You know, I can do that. But then when you get to the representative and they're like, okay, can I have your phone number, please? So I can pull up your, like,
I was just going to mention that. That is the worst, the redundant request for information. Yep. I mean, I love what you're saying because, I mean, I've even written a bunch of articles about being in the world of the customer. Mm-hmm. And one of my pet peeves about this is I'm a member of LA Fitness, all right? Mm-hmm. And LA Fitness, not that I've been there recently, but they have this giant spin bike room, right? That has like 60 spin bikes in it. And it's the only location in the club with spin bikes in it. Mm-hmm. And there's only 2 classes a day. So that room is essentially occupied for like, you know, 2 hours of the 24 they're open. And so I wanted to be able to go in there and use a spin bike, except they have the lights on a timer. So the lights are off all but the 2 hours of the day when there's a spin class on. And I've gone to them and said, like, listen, could you turn the lights on? I read on the bike. Like, I'd like to be able to read. Like, as you can see, I'm a little bit addicted to reading. And they're like, no, we can't do that. It's impossible. There's no way we can do that. Well, could you pull a couple of those bikes onto the floor so people could use the bikes? No, we can't do that. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I've been trying to get them to do this for a year. And I'm like, who is this for? This is for your power bill. This is not for me.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, it's amazing what people, you know, they let their policies and procedures get in the way of creating a great experience for their customers. And anytime somebody says something like, nope, sorry, you know, it's policy, mm-hmm. you know, I look to them, I'm like, are you kidding me? Change your policy. Right. You know, I mean, the lights can come on at other times. You just got to get into your little doodad and program them. Mm-hmm. You know, I tried to send a fax once from a hotel, and it was early in the morning and the business office was closed. So I went up to the front desk. I said, do you mind, is a one-page fax, do you mind, can you send this for me? And the front desk lady looked at me and says, no, I'm not really sure how I can do that. I said, well, do you have a fax machine? She goes, oh yeah, we have a fax machine. I said, do you know how to use the fax machine? She goes, yes. I said, could you send this fax? She goes, no, you know, this is only for office personnel, you know, employees of the hotel. I can't, you know, I can't send it. You have to wait for the business office to open up. I said, okay, well, how about I give you, let's say, I'll give you a dollar. You're sending a one-page fax. Do you think that I'm overpaying for this service? I'm giving you a dollar. She goes, oh yeah, that's kind of seems kind of silly. Why would you want to give me a dollar to send a fax? I said, well, will you do it now? Oh no, I don't have any way to ring that dollar up. I'm like, oh my God, you got to be kidding me. So I was at Disney at the time, and I went to the Village Marketplace, and I ran into a custodian sweeping the leaves up. And remember now, it's about 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning. There's nobody else around. I said, excuse me, is there an office around here where I could send a fax? And he instantly said, oh yeah, sure. Let's come on over to the housekeeping office. We'll get that done for you. I said, how much is it going to cost? He goes, oh, nothing. I said, you're not going to charge me? He goes, my boss would look at me silly if I tried to charge to send a fax. So come on in, let's get it done. Boom, send it. I mean, I tried to give the guy a tip and I knew he wouldn't accept it, but that's letting business policies get in the way. And we were with a large convention. And you think I recommended that hotel to the convention host? Forget it.
No, that's very interesting. And it kind of piggybacks on the conversation we were having yesterday on the show, on the roundtable, small companies versus large corporations. Sometimes larger companies take the stance of, we don't care. We don't care if your process our process and our procedure turns away customers. This is just the way it is. And the specific conversation was smaller companies, they take more time as far as the communication. They make sure that you understand that they care. They're going to respond to their email. They're going to take that phone call because they want your business. There's been a trend with larger companies, larger corporations, to remove customer service completely. We don't want to talk to you. We don't want to answer your email. We don't want you to call customer service. There is no customer service phone number. If you have a question, go to the FAQ. That has, you know, been the conversation. What are your thoughts on that, Ben?
Well, you know, I think that anytime, you know, a big box store comes into a town, you know, all the little bookstores and, you know, knickknack stores and everything, they get all nervous. Oh my God, Walmart's coming. But what they don't realize is that they are a lot more nimble than Walmart. You don't have to price yourself like a Walmart. You don't have to act like them, market like them, or anything like that. You need to do what you need to do as your personality, the way you do business. And, you know, one of the things you said there kind of caught my ear, though, is, you know, you said the customer service department. And, you know, I'm a firm believer that there is no customer service department. Customer service is, you know, it is a philosophy. It's, are you going to be a customer-centered company? Are you going to focus your energies and your resources on taking care of the customer? Because obviously without the customer, you don't have a business.
Correct. You know, it's funny. I would take a little bit of issue with what you said, Sharif, and not because I don't agree that there are horrible examples of service out there in the large business world, but that I think that both large and small businesses can be customer-centric and serve their customers really well if that's part of their culture and part of their core values and part of their operational structure. And mm-hmm. I have had fallouts with small businesses where they clearly, you know, were amazingly inflexible and unresponsive to what I was asking. And I've dealt with large businesses that bent over backwards to make me happy. I mean, mm-hmm. I'll give you a perfect case in point. TiVo is a large company. I happen mm-hmm. to own a TiVo. They have replaced my TiVo 3 times when it's had some kind of malfunction. They have accommodated me in transferring everything that I had on one to the other. None of this has cost me a penny, and I don't have a subscription with them. I bought one box one time. So they made $500 on me one time 4 years ago, and they have been giving me service consistently inside of that original commitment with no promise I'll ever spend another dime with them. On the other hand, I have local restaurants that are so cantankerous and rude that I won't go there no matter how good the food is.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, really you bring up some great points. If you look at Zappos, mm-hmm. for example, I mean, their service is outstanding. I mean, they even have Zappos University where they invite other business owners in to see how it is that they do what they do.
That book's on the other wall over here, actually.
The store out of Maine, of course, the name
LL Bean.
LL Bean has been, you know, I don't want to say notorious, but for their customer service. And just last year, they stopped doing their no returns, after so many. I mean, you could return something that was 10 years old just because it was worn out. Few people were taking advantage of it, and they finally stopped that. But you're absolutely right. It comes from the leader. It comes from the owner. And if the owner is not focused on the experience or, you know, the policies and the procedures to be there for ease of transaction for the customer, mm-hmm. then, yeah, it, big or small, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I love your response. I mean, and I don't take an issue with anyone taking issue with me. I love it. That's why it's the Roundtable Talk Show, for us to have honest and open discussions on what's going on in the world. And you just made me want to go and buy a TiVo. I've been looking for a new television. I have to get one. And word of mouth and referrals is the number one form, no matter what, of marketing and advertising, because we're going to ask people we know and the people we trust before we do anything else. And I think I wasn't clear in my point in my statement. Sometimes I just throw out this raw information. But specifically, I was referring to companies such as Google and Facebook and a lot of the internet companies who have made a practice of not having mm-hmm. a telephone number, a way for you to call them and reach out to them, or an email address available for customer service. And I agree wholeheartedly with you, Vance, and not having a customer service department. That's one of the things that I learned early on. Everyone is in customer service, whether you're the accountant, whether you're the front desk receptionist, everyone is in customer service because we are here to service the customer.
And I I'm sorry, go ahead, Ami.
That's okay. There's an underlying strategic point that gets lost in all this too, because on the one hand, there's just the philosophical question of what are we in business for, right? We're in business for delivering service. We're also in business to make money. Mm-hmm. And the reality is that the cheapest marketing you have and the cheapest customer acquisition you can possibly do is to sell something to the existing customer. Mm-hmm. It's very expensive to find a new customer. So if you just look at the dollars and cents of it, you're much better to keep the customer you have, who you already spent that money on and who has already purchased from you, and get them to buy the next thing than you are to go looking for their replacement. So customer service that really does accommodate customers and that's responsive and flexible is good business. I mean, it actually yields better returns than does churning through customers and having to spend tons of money on finding the next one.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, a lot of the people that are omnipresent are the utilities, and I consider Google a utility. Facebook is, I'm not saying they should be regulated. I'm not getting into that argument with anybody.
Well, that's a whole different show.
They are all over. But And people never thought that, you know, they think that Google is going to be around forever. They never thought back in the early 1900s that Woolworths would ever disappear. I mean, it was a staple in every town. It's going to be around for 3,000 years. They're going, you can't find a Woolworths anymore. Mm-hmm. Same with Sears, JCPenney. They're all kind of folding up. So if they lost focus. So if these companies like Google and Facebook and Twitter, et cetera, don't maintain a focus on the customer, there's going to be a new something, a new technology, a new service that is going to be so much better than what they're providing. And they're providing a better service experience for the customer that, you know, Google might disappear in 15 years. Who knows?
Amy, I wanted your thoughts on that.
Yeah, so I think, I mean, customer service, obviously, and differentiating yourself in the eyes of your customers, excuse me, is one way to sustain your business. I would say that in many of those cases, it was less a failure of customer service than it was a failure to adapt to a changing marketplace. I mean, I heard you mention Blockbuster, Sharifa. Blockbuster wasn't an issue of service. It was that they just couldn't believe that anybody was going to glom onto this DVDs in the mail thing, which Netflix offered. And so they didn't make the changes in their strategy rapidly enough. And so by the time Netflix had real traction and was beginning to stream, movies and so forth, Blockbuster was so far behind the shifting reality that they couldn't possibly catch up. And I would say exactly the same thing with Sears. Sears got really distracted in their strategy. They used to be, their Craftsman line and their appliances were really the mainstay of their strategy. And they could have maintained that differentiator had they focused on it, but they got preoccupied. They took a strategic left turn and started trying to sell everything to everybody and cutting prices and trying to go back to the Sears robot catalog days so that you would buy everything at Sears, when in reality, if Sears had spun off its everything and just kept its tools and appliances division, they'd still be here today. I mean, I will stand by that. Nobody knows because we don't know what a counterfactual really could turn out as. But at the time that their CEO decided to invest in cutting prices and bargain basement clothing and all that kind of thing, I was mystified. I was like, why would Sears try to compete with Marshalls? I don't understand. Like, why don't they focus on Kenmore and Craftsman and the things they do really well? Mm. And now we don't have Sears.
Yes, I definitely have to go to Beyond Better and check out everything, your articles, because I can tell just by the information you provided, you definitely know what you're talking about. Again, it reminds me of a conversation we were having about Ross. I love Ross stores. Ross is closed now due to the epidemic, but there was no Ross.com. It was just a landing page, nowhere for people to go in order to order, you know, clothes online, where other companies had, you know, e-commerce for years. Ross now suffered because they have no e-commerce. So it's not only, I don't, you know, blame customer service, the lack of customer service. I love watching stories, you know, the stories of companies, the lessons, the pivots that if they would have done this, then maybe they would have been here. Or if they hadn't done this, then they wouldn't be here. So, right. You know, I love the examples that you're giving.
So I'm curious to know more about your business, Vance. So just because the conversation took a left turn, and I know that, and a good turn, but I'm kind of curious about how you work, like what you offer and what kind of businesses you work with.
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, essentially, if you serve customers, whether you're B2B or B2C, you know, everybody could stand to get a little Disney in their life. One of the big things that I don't do is encourage people to out and out adopt what Disney is doing. Because unless you own a theme park or a movie studio or something like that, it makes no sense to adopt them. What you want to do is you want to adapt their strategies to your niche. And they apply to butcher, baker, candlestick maker, attorney, what have you. If you're serving clients, then that's what you want to, you know, you want to emulate those kinds of things.
So do you mostly work with like sort of smaller businesses, like what you're describing, like lawyers, insurance agencies? I'm just trying to like, if I were going to, you know, refer somebody to you, I'm curious to know, like, where would I look in my universe?
Yeah, I mean, professional services, certainly. You know, I've had one client who was an online retailer. That's really not my bailiwick. That's not where I really work. It's, you know, a boss or an owner that has a team. You know, I've worked with, you know, large dental groups that have, you know, 15, 17 offices scattered around. So really professional services folks that are really looking to different, especially the ones that have been commoditized. Again, dentists. I mean, you know, everybody cleans teeth the same way. You know, it's okay, well, what is the experience that you have, you know, when you go to the dentist? But, you know, the process that I use is the same process that I used when we created a restaurant called Chef Mickey's at the Contemporary Resort. I don't know if either of you have been there.
I have been to the Contemporary Resort, but not to Chef Mickey's.
Oh, you got to try it out. It's
well,
number
I was
one
probably
character
there last when I was like nine. So, okay.
yeah, this was built back in the 90s. So we put together, you know, one of the key things that we had to do was, this is where the, pardon me, where the characters walk around the tables, greet you while you're eating dinner. And so we had to make sure that Mickey Mouse was able to get through the entire dining room, which at the time was just over 400 seats, in a expeditious manner so that he saw everybody, but also so that it was an experience. And we had to do this within 43 minutes. And you probably ask yourself, why 43 minutes? Well, in restaurant terminology, we had a table for two, and they typically sat for about 43 minutes. And then the bigger the tables got, the longer they stayed. So in order to make sure we hit those tables for two, we had to have Mickey get through there. So we had to come up with processes and systems in order to make that happen. So we got with the entertainment department and we mapped out the dining room and where things were going. And then we came up with a, with the production company, we came up with a special song because everybody wants to have their birthday, bar mitzvah, you know, divorce, whatever they're celebrating. They want to have their picture with the character. So, and that slowed him down quite a bit. So now every 42 minutes, they have this celebration song that plays and the characters dance and everybody's happy and the characters don't get slowed down. We had the housekeeping department come in and, you know, I played this one. This is great. You're going to love this. You know, we were a buffet, so it was all you can eat. And think about where the guests have been all day. They've been in the sun. They've been in the parks. They're probably malnourished. They're probably dehydrated. I mean, who can afford the $9 hot dog, right? So you get into...
No, when I go to the beach or when I go to resorts, it seems like people can't stop putting stuff in their mouth at the pool or the beach.
Exactly. Well, we also had all-you-can-eat ice cream. And invariably, about once a week, you know, some kid or adult, you know, would end up... Bleh, you know, all over the floor. And that would stop my staff, my team, from doing their job because they had to go clean up this mess. So it slowed down the table turns in the restaurant. So we got the housekeeping department and said, you know, we are experts at serving food, but we are not experts at cleaning. Could you help us?
The other way around.
So we had a hot button installed. And anytime we had an accident like that, we just took a napkin, dropped it over there, hit the hot button. And within a couple of minutes, housekeeping was up there. So it was all those things.
When you first mentioned housekeeping, I had this image of housekeeping with like a dustbin because maybe Mickey had to use the bathroom in the middle.
And like,
like if Mickey were a real mouse or a horse or a cow.
Yeah. So that's kind of a long-winded story of what I do. Disney is all built on systems. And if you don't have systems in your company and you just run it willy-nilly, you're missing out on a lot of profitability. You're missing out on a lot of client engagement and you're missing out on a lot on your employees being engaged with your business. And so I take and create those systems with the owner or the manager of the store And, you know, we identify areas where there's going to be interactions with their guests or their clients. And, okay, what's that interaction going to look like? And then does that become a wow moment? And does that become one of those creating an experience out of the mundane? And then we identify what those are, map out the whole thing, and bada boom, bada bing, we got ourselves a winning plan.
Interesting. Mm. How long were you at Disney?
I was there for 10 years.
Okay.
A lot of fun.
It has.
Have you ever been to Pleasure Island? Did you ever get a chance to go when it was there?
Yeah.
This was Disney's, failure. I call it a failure with booze, nighttime entertainment, debauchery, scantily clad women, et cetera, et cetera. And I was a nightclub manager there. And it was the theme of the place was New Year's Eve every night.
Right.
And at last count, I had 1,003 New Year's Eves under my belt. So I don't do New Year's Eve anymore.
That's very interesting. So Vance, let me ask you, everything with the processes, the procedures, the experiences is wonderful. But when does a company come to you and say, you know what? I need an experience. I need to change this into experience. What usually motivates that company to go from just I'm offering products or I'm offering services or this is the business that I operate to let's make this into an experience?
Well, certainly, I think, you know, when their bottom line is stalled or going negative is usually a thing that's, oh, my God, you know, we got to do something. Ami said it very well earlier that, you know, the most expensive thing you can do is to buy a new client, buy a new customer. So, you know, when you have an experience, you automatically start to have a referral source. People are at your business is tellable. You know, people talk about, oh my God, you'll never guess what happened at the dentist. He had a grand piano in the middle of it, a cappuccino machine over here, and it didn't smell like that god-awful toothpaste. It smelled like cookies because he was actually baking them in the kitchen behind us. I mean, when was the last time you walked into the dentist office and it smelled like cookies? Probably never. What's that?
I said, I have never walked into the dentist office like cookies.
But, you know, now, too, it's people want to reinvent themselves. And this is a perfect opportunity. People are closed right now. And if you ever, as a business owner, wanted to say, you know, I wish I could have done that. I wish I could have done this. Or my employee, you know, Sally never did it the way I wanted Sally to do it. Well, Sally's laid off. Nobody says you got to bring her back. So find another Sally and let's, you know, build your business the way you want it to be.
I think that's such a great point. And I've actually seen that in a number of my clients right now, which is that, like, I'll give you an example. I have one client that owns a in-assisted living facility physical therapy agency. So they have in-house physical therapists in multiple assisted living facilities all over the region. But of course, they are not selling a lot right now. Like the people are already there doing their work and the operation is running smoothly. But because the sales are, you know, they don't have the same amount of demand to be going out and doing pitches and presentations and finding new clients, the two partners have taken the opportunity to really go to work on their infrastructure, to start investing in the systems and processes necessary to scale the business nationally, which is their ultimate plan. And this is an unusual client for me because it's not a space that I really know anything about or have much experience in. But, you know, all they're really looking for me to is to help them develop the strategy and identify the right systems and then drive it through the organization, which is, you know, it's not subject matter specific. It's it's strategy and execution specific. But what's really amazing is that they, while the business is stable, but the one partner who's responsible for their commercial growth, you know, started out really frustrated because his days are usually occupied with, you know, sales presentations and pitches and growing his team and cultivating his sales expertise. And he said, you know, this has been the most productive 2.5 months of our business because we are really creating the conditions inside of which we can explode our business when this starts to ebb. And, you know, it's been quite an amazing sort of period of time for people to foment change and invest in things that they wouldn't otherwise have the time and space to do. And I say that without any kind of dismissal of the people that are truly suffering right now. And I don't want to sound like I'm unaware of that, because I do recognize that. But there is this other side of the challenges, which is this sort of creative and imaginative impetus that people can take to use this opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I work with clients with, especially ones that are really engaged in their business, is, you know, they need to take time to step away to work on the business rather than work in the business.
Right.
And, you know, this COVID time period, the stay at home thing, has really forced that onto a lot of people. And I hope that most will take this and create a habit out of it, that, you know, wow, I got, as you said, I got so much done. I've been so productive in these 2 months. I never thought I could do it. And like, well, you know, carve out 4 hours a week where it's a think day, or, go to the library whenever they open again, you know, and be without your phone, be without your computer. Just take a yellow legal pad with you and a pen and, you know, start writing, come up with, you know, what you want to become. There's a lot to be said about a little bit of downtime.
I definitely agree. One of the things that the trends that I'm seeing go is the whole work from home experience. We're going to use that because in honor of Vance, but the work from home experience, companies such as Twitter have made the decision that their employees can remain working from home if they so choose. I'm also seeing that with other companies as well. People in my family who have always gone into the office are now being given the option to work from home. Are either of you seeing that transition with your client?
I think I said this earlier, you know, a lot of my clients already had distributed teams. And mm-hmm. so what they're mostly experiencing is the downside of working from home rather than the upside. Mm-hmm. But it's funny, I was interviewed a few weeks ago by somebody who wanted to know what my prognostications are, because I do a little bit of sort of futurism type work. And mm-hmm. I said that I thought that, and I still think this, a lot of businesses that have been resistant to virtual working and working from home and remote teams, now that they've seen how doable it is, I think we're going to see an increase in the flexibility of workplaces. I don't think that companies are going to go to an all work from home model, because there is a lot of downside to it. I mean, what you said about not having your colleagues, I find the reason I launched that platform, beyondbetter.online, is largely because I find, and I've worked from home for 25 years, mm-hmm. but what I really miss is the cross-pollination of the conversations that happen spontaneously with colleagues. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you can have all the meetings in the world that you want, but you can't manufacture out of thin air what happens when you're just standing next to somebody in the kitchen making a cup of tea. Like mm-hmm. those moments of sort of diffuse thinking and casual conversations and building relationships are very difficult to replicate in a virtual environment. So what I think we're going to see is more and more companies going to things like having half the team work every other day, or allowing work from home 2 to 3 days a week, so that they then can invest in fewer square feet in commercial office space, which I think it's going to be really hard. Although somebody said to me, they think that companies are going to invest in more commercial real estate so they can space people out. I'm skeptical about that. I think that the opposite is going to happen, that they're going to start to husband their real estate resources in such a way that they sort of do alternate day, work from home optional. And so people will be able to, for example, work a different schedule or not work on Tuesdays because that's the day my kid has ballet, or that kind of a thing. So yeah, I think there will be more flexibility. I don't think that working from home is going to become the norm, though.
Yeah, and the productivity increases that people have gotten. I mean, you know, if you're given an 8-hour day to do something, well, you're going to take 8 hours to get that thing done. It's that mm-hmm. look busy thing that all employees seem to master at some point. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you're home or away from that office and you still have that thing to do, well, now I can get it done in an hour and a half because I don't have any disruptions. You know, Steve's not stopping by, poking his head in to have a minute. You know, I'm not making 9 trips to the coffee machine, et cetera, et cetera. All those things that will diminish productivity. So I think you're going to see a lot of productivity increases, especially by companies that, you know, I'm not saying the outsourced call centers and things like that, but, you know, people that are actually on a deadline. I think you're going to see a lot of improvements in productivity because of this.
You know, one of the things that I think is going to change as a function of what you're describing is that the performance measurement structure will change as in a way that I've been advocating for many years, as have many others. This isn't at all unique to me. Instead of measuring people on how much time they spend on something, beginning to evaluate people's performance based on their actual output. I mean, I don't know if any of you, like I was the kind of consultant at one point in my life where I charged by the hour and people would ask for a proposal and I would have to back into my proposal price by justifying it with some number of hours. But it just so happens that I'm very fast. Like I don't fit into the mold of taking the number of hours it was meant to take, which meant that I lost money because I couldn't justify the amount of time necessary to get my fees to the level that I needed them to be to justify the value of the product. And so if people's productivity goes up, there's an opportunity for management then to begin to invert the way they measure people's performance. And instead of caring how much time they take, just caring about what they produce, which allows for people potentially, at least in the knowledge work world, to be able to work fewer hours while producing better work and have more leisure time, which would give us a chance to be a little bit more like Europe, where people don't spend 60 hours a week working. They actually have more balance in their lives between their interests and their families and their recreation and their work. And then you can also, it allows you also to diversify your education because you can not be working 60 hours a week and go do another degree, go learn another language, go travel somewhere and work from there, which I think is a huge opportunity for everybody.
I love it. Yes, I would love for you to come back, Ami and Vance as well, because your point right there is something I've been trying to explain to people for years. That's the story of my life. I tell people I do everything fast. I type fast, I talk fast, I walk fast, I fast, everything is fast. I type 85 words a minute so I can do in less time what it takes the average person.
Yeah, I'm a two-finger typer. I hunt and peck very fast.
But other people, it takes them a long amount of time to do it. And then when you add on to the fact, exactly what Vance was saying, people, you know, popping into the cubicle, walking over to the coffee machine, that takes up more time. When I'm more of a focus, let's get this job done, let's get this project done. And I remember years ago when I was working for different temp companies, I got a temp assignment. And the person, the agency that gave me assignment was so excited for me. They were like, Sharifa, we got you into this company. It's the best. Anyone who goes into this company always gets hired. They were like, they're going to love you. They're going to hire you. So I'm working in this company. I'm doing basically data entry and I keep getting finished. And I'm like, okay, what's next? What's next? What's next? Well, I've entered that. What's next? And so the manager of the company, he comes over to me and I never forget his words. He says, Sharifa, you're going to work yourself out of a job. And this is like, you know, I'm in probably my early or late 20s. I had no idea what working yourself out of a job even meant. I'm like, that makes no sense. If there's work, you pay me and that's it. But out of this whole, and the agency told me, out of this whole history of this company and the people they sent to them, I was the only person that they didn't hire. They didn't hire me. And that's because I noticed that a lot of the people, to me, in my little mind, were sitting around BSing. They were sitting around, you know, doing a little bit of, it was an easy, cushy job, do a little bit of work, talk to your friends, everything is going to be okay. But me, I was like, I want to do the work. I want to do the data entry. You know, I'm not interested in talking and making friends. So they didn't hire me.
Yeah, I mean, you hear about that in like shop floors where one person's working twice as hard and everybody else is like, don't make us look bad. this sort of lore from the days of the early, when America was predominantly industrial rather than knowledge workers. I do think that's starting to shift a little bit, that, you know, we talk about, if you talk to economists, they'll tell you that America hasn't had significant productivity gains over the last 20 years, and that that's the reason why the economy has been in the state it's in. But, you know, I think that part of the reason we haven't had productivity gains is because where we measure productivity is primarily in the manufacturing sector, where there is kind of a cap on productivity unless you just automate. Whereas in the knowledge sector, we are trying to measure people, pay them by how much time they spend doing things rather than what they produce, which is a very skewed way of measuring, because in point of fact, who cares how long it takes you to do something? If the job was write this, code this, invent this, think about this and develop that, the goal is to create that output, that product, that thought process, that new strategy, that article. It's not to fill up the available time as per Parkinson's law, which is the law that says any job will fill up all the available time, you know?
Yes. Now we are coming down to actually the last 2 minutes of the show. We just got to talking. I was enjoying the conversation, but we are down to the last couple of minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who's listening live, as well as everyone who's watching it in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance. So we're going to go ahead and start with you, Vance.
Oh, wow. I thought it was ladies first, but I'll take it. You know, certainly I think what people need to take away from this is the opportunity to, one, reinvent themselves, whether it's because you're closed or just because you're thinking, I wish my business was like this. You know, those are, you are the owner, you are the entrepreneur, you're the whatever your title is, that thing is yours. So make it the way you want it to be. Don't let your employees get in the way. Don't let your, you know, vendors get in the way. Create the thing that you want, run it your way, and then make sure you enforce what you want to have done, because without enforcement, everything that you just worked for is going to go away very quickly. So yeah, just do your thing.
Do your thing. You heard it here on the Roundtable Talk Show. Dan says, do your thing. Ami, what do you have for us?
Well, I would say this. Don't settle for incremental improvement. Mm-hmm. If your business or your enterprise or your personal life has been on a kind of steady upward trajectory, I mean, clearly that's better than being on a downward trajectory, but there is an opportunity to create a significant change, a significant breakthrough, whether it's in your business, in your organization, in your marriage, in your fitness, your health, your diet, or your relationship with your children. I think everywhere in our lives is essentially a substrate for generating a breakthrough. And those breakthroughs won't come by trying to do more, better, or different of what you've done in the past. You're going to have to invent a new way to do things, a new way to see things. That's very difficult to do on your own. So I would invite anybody who's up to that or interested in that to go to beyondbetter.online, request to join. All we do there is share information, thoughts, opportunities about how to develop ourselves as leaders, as humans, and to generate breakthroughs. So beyondbetter.online, I hope to see you there. And if you want to know more about me and my business, there's a ton of information online, and I'm sure you can figure that out. And Sharifa, thank you so much. I really enjoyed this.
You are so welcome, both of you. Vance, Ami, thank you both for joining me today. It was such a pleasure. I love speaking with you. I usually don't have people who take issue with me. Usually they just like, yeah, Sharifa's right. And I'm like, I don't need yes people. I want to have an honest, open, authentic conversation. And you definitely brought that today. I mean, I really appreciate it. I am going to go to beyondbetter.online. I'm going to request to join. Hopefully I make the cut. Hopefully I come in there and somebody will click the approve button. You know,
I'm the approver. So you are pre-approved, both of you.
Oh, good credit. I'm pre-approved. I love it. I want to thank you both for being a guest on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I enjoyed the show. If you enjoyed the show, just don't enjoy it by yourself. Share it with your friends. We shared so much information, tips, strategies, things that you can do for your business. Share it with a friend. Check out their websites in the description of the post. And if you are interested in being a guest, please visit the website at ashsharifa.com. Until tomorrow, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.